One of the crew had put in a bunk, which would serve as a crude simulation for the couch in Hecate's cockpit. The virtual reality stereo goggles were resting on the bunk, together with a set of data gloves and slippers. It took me several minutes to open the faceplate of my helmet and hook the goggles over the bridge of my nose, even longer to worm on the gloves and work the slippers over my clumsy boots. Fuchs grumbled impatiently every moment of the time.
"The way you're going about it, it'd be easier on my blood pressure for me to pilot Hecate myself," he complained.
That was the first time I'd ever heard him mention his blood pressure in front of the crew. He must have been truly disturbed with my slowness. "I'm getting onto the couch now," I said, once I had closed the faceplate again.
"About time," he muttered.
Once I was stretched out prone on the couch, my vision suddenly began to swirl giddily, flashes of color flicking on and off. For an instant I thought this was some new symptom of my anemia, but then the flashing ended as abruptly as it had started, and I was looking at Hecate's control panel. The virtual reality simulation had kicked in. My goggles were showing what I'd see when I actually was piloting the little ship. Above the panel I saw the strewn wreckage of phosphorus, torn and twisted sections of the ship's metallic hull. A computer graphics illusion, I knew, generated for the VR program, but it looked very real to me, fully three-dimensional. My imaginary Hecate was hovering 3 kilometers above the illusory wreckage of phosphorus, so my virtual instruments told me. I could see nothing inside the wreck because we had no idea of what to expect in there. My task was to learn how to bring Hecate smoothly down to the wreckage, search its interior for any sign of Alex's remains, and then get safely back to Lucifer again. The ship's controls were simple enough. The computer did most of the work. I merely ran my gloved fingertips over the touchpads in the control panel, and the ship responded almost instantly. Whoever had designed the control system had done an admirable job. It all worked intuitively. Right hand controlled pitch and yaw, left hand controlled roll. When you wanted to go left, you moved your right index finger leftward along the touchpad. When you wanted to pitch the nose down, you slid your forefinger down the pad. The right foot pedal controlled the thrusters at the ship's tail. The left pedal worked her fins, which pivoted like the diving planes of a submarine. Simple, but not easy. I won't tell you how poorly I did at first. My clumsy attempts at piloting had Fuchs swearing and me sweating.
"You're overcorrecting," he would shout into my earphones. Or, "Too steep! You're coming in too steep!"
It took more than a dozen tries before he was satisfied enough to let me descend to the wreckage. Then I practiced working the Waldos, the glove-like implements that controlled the manipulator hands outside the hull. Again, it was simplicity itself in principle. Whatever motions your fingers made were reproduced faithfully by the mechanical hands outside. Again, it was devilishly difficult in practice to get the feel of those manipulators, to learn how to work them deftly enough to pick up a scrap of twisted metal or a piece of shattered equipment. By the time Fuchs finally agreed to end the VR session, I was soaked with perspiration and gasping for breath.
"Meet me in the sick bay," he said as I wearily picked myself up from the bunk that had served as the virtual Hecate's couch.
Nodon came to the VR chamber to help me out of the heat suit. A good thing, too. I don't think I could have done much more than lift the heavy metal helmet off my head.
"How long was I in there?" I asked, panting, as he tugged the suit's heavy torso up and over my head.
"One full watch, almost," he said. "Nearly 8 hours. No wonder I was exhausted." A sly smile cracked his thin, almost fleshless face.
"Captain said you did very well," he confided.
"He did?"
"Oh, yes. He said you didn't wreck ship once. Almost, but no wreck."
Faint praise from Fuchs was like a Nobel Prize from anyone else, I thought.
"He also said not to tell you," Nodon added, his smile turning into a boyish grin.
Marguerite was in the sick bay with Fuchs when I got there.
"I don't think we should go through with this transfusion," she said. "You've just suffered a serious stroke, and—"
"And he's not going out in Hecate with his damned anemia gnawing at him," Fuchs snapped.
He was sitting on the narrow examination table, Marguerite standing beside him.
"But your condition," Marguerite objected.
He forced a grisly smile for her.
Your ministrations have worked wonders. I'm fine.
She could be just as stubborn as her mother, though. Marguerite insisted on doing a scan of Fuchs's brain before proceeding with the transfusion. I stood in the hatch of the crowded sickbay, feeling tired and weaker every second, while she made him lie down, fixed the scanner to Fuchs's head, and ran off a reading. Watching him lying there, his eyes closed while the scanner buzzed softly, I realized anew that this man was my father. It was hard to accept that, even though I knew it was true. I mean, it's one thing to know something is true intellectually, up in the front of your brain. But to feel it, to accept it down in your guts, that's something else entirely. He's my father, I said silently to myself over and over again. This man who can be so brutal at one moment, and then quote poetry a moment later. This bundle of contradictions. This wounded, snarling animal is my father. I'm made from his genes. I believed it, but still I had no real feeling for Fuchs, except a grudging respect and a healthy amount of outright fear. The scanner stopped its buzzing. Marguerite removed it from Fuchs's head while the main display screen on the bulkhead began building up a three-dimensional view of his brain. We all peered at the image intently, even though I really didn't know what I was supposed to be looking for. See? Fuchs said, sitting up again as he pointed to the false-color image of his own brain. No permanent damage. The image looked like a normal brain to me. All of it tinged a sort of bluish-gray. No alarming areas of red, which I presumed was the color that would be used to show damage.
New blood vessels are developing, Marguerite said cautiously.
But the area where the blockage occurred isn't fully repaired yet. With an impatient shake of his head, Fuchs said,
It's too small to matter. I feel fine. Take a liter of my blood, and my pressure will go down to normal.
A liter? Marguerite's eyes flashed wide. Not even half that much.
Fuchs chuckled. He had been joking, I realized. He had a strange sense of humor, dealing with people's lives, including his own. Rolling up his sleeve and lying back down on the table, he growled,
Come on, get it over with.
I sat in the chair Marguerite had jammed in next to the table and closed my eyes. I couldn't stand to watch anyone get a needle jabbed into his flesh, especially me. I went back to my bunk in the crew's quarters and slept very soundly. If I dreamed, I don't remember it. When I awoke, I felt strong, refreshed. Then I realized that in a few hours I would be donning that heavy heat suit again and crawling into the real cockpit of the actual Hecate. I would be going down to the surface of Venus, the first live human being to do so. Me. Alone down there where the rocks were red hot and the air so thick it could crush a spacecraft into crumpled wreckage. To my surprise, I wasn't terrified. Oh, there were butterflies in my stomach, true enough. I didn't feel like one of those ultra-cool adventurers you see on video. I fully realized that there was a fine chance that I'd die out there, beside my brother. But most of those butterflies inside me were from anticipation. To my utter surprise, I was looking forward to this. I told myself I was a fool, but it didn't matter. I wanted to go. Wanted to be the first living human being to reach the hellhole surface of Venus. Wanted to get down there and search for Alex's remains. I forced myself to picture my home in Majorca, and the cool, lovely blue sky and sea, and Gwyneth, my friends. My life before this mission to Venus had shattered everything. It all seemed pale and senseless now. Pointless. Mere existence. Not living. Even as I began to pull on the heat suit, with Nodon and sulky Amar Jagal helping me, I couldn't help thinking, I'm alive. I'm doing something real, something that's never been done before, something that matters in the ongoing development of the human race. A voice in my head warned sardonically, What you are doing is very likely to kill you. And the other side of my mind quoted Shakespeare, We owe God a death. He that dies this year is quit for the next. In other words, I had gone slightly crazy. Hecate. Things started going wrong right from the start.